Hey Rebels, my name is Matthew Barton. Welcome to the Rebellion Brewing Podcast. Fina Nelson is a scientist, researcher, and a brewer who's plugged into the Saskatchewan craft beer scene. She's doing cutting-edge work with yeast research and development, and she's a strong advocate for women in beer. The arc of her story runs from geology to genetics, but she's still making kick-ass beer, and that has me asking so many more questions. So let's get into it. Fina, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. It's nice to see you.
For the uninitiated, for the people who aren't your mom tuning into the episode, who are you and what do you do?
So, as you said, I'm a researcher, and I've just started a PhD in the last year here at the U of S in the food and bioproduct sciences. But the best thing about this PhD is that it's a MITAX industrial partnership. So I'm combining our research at the university with practical brewing stuff at 21st Street Brewery. So it's this great partnership that really brings innovation from the university and from the lab into the craft brew scene, and really getting the expertise from the brewers themselves. And recently we just got money from the Agricultural Development Fund from the Ministry of Agriculture. So we have a lot of people who are really pulling together on this project, and I love being the bridge there.
I love that you've brought together academia, breweries, government, ag. What did you do start with first? Brewing, academia, being the bridge?
So I've always been a science nerd, the kind of kid that never stopped asking why. And I initially went into geology because rocks are cool. And then I fell in love with geochemistry and sort of environmental and analytical work. So I was really excited to be solving problems in our province, looking at contaminant transport, looking at some of our industries and how we can do better. And after doing some analytical work in geochemistry, I ended up doing analytical work in plant sciences. So instead of looking at groundwater, I was looking at plant extracts. And that was a fantastic job working in plant sciences. And the lab next door was Chris Eskew's lab. So we would have coffee in the hallways, and he would tell me about his amazing research, which is nutritional genomics and looking at how nutrition and cells interact. And so we'd end up going for beers, and I just sit with my jaw on the table listening to the incredible research they were doing. And then he called me into his office one day and said, "Do you want to do a PhD?" And I said, "Absolutely not." And then he told me, "Well, it's the beer project." And I had heard about this beer project, and it was just something I couldn't say no to. So I got the offer on Friday, and by Monday I was resigning from my job and jumping in with both feet. So it's been a roller coaster, but my curiosity just keeps taking me to new places.
For the uninitiated, help me unpack the idea of a multidisciplinary approach to these problems, because it sounds like you and Chris didn't start in the same place academically.
Right. Yeah. Like I don't have a background in genetics, but I have a strong analytical background. I understand how to set up experiments, how to design them and execute them properly. And then how to really have good quality control when it comes to your analyses. So that's sort of the angle I bring to it, is that problem solving and real detail oriented side of things. And then Dr. Eskew brings in his genetics research. And then Casey Murray at 21st Street, the brewer there, he brings in a whole nother set of expertise. So we really have this fantastic team that when we sit and start addressing a question, we really get all different perspectives on that question. And it gives us some really novel ways to solve those problems.
You join up with Chris. How did you get linked in with Casey?
So Chris actually ended up just really enjoying 21st Street beers. And he'd go down there and he started to talk to Casey. And they started to just bounce around ideas about research and science. And once they had decided that they were going to do this project, they needed somebody to come on. And I was asked if I wanted to join. So I was quite lucky.
You talked about frame of reference or perspective. Can you give me an example of a question or a topic within the research where Chris or yourself or even Casey brings a different way of looking at a problem and somehow finding a solution, or even just kind of blowing your mind with their perspectives?
Yeah, especially like when you're coming from a lab environment, we have a lot of control over what we're doing. Like Chris is working with petri dishes, with individual cells, very tight controls on what's going on. On the other side of things, with Casey at the brewery, as much as brewers try to have a lot of control, there's so many variables that it ends up being a little bit more of an art and a feel for what's happening. So having those two very different backgrounds, then trying to solve the same problem, we end up with having quite a bit of detail-oriented talk, and then, well, wait a minute, we have to back up a little and look at the bigger picture here. And at the end of the day, what I'm really interested in looking at is how are the yeast behaving? You know, I'm a yeast psychologist here. and that has to take into account the details of the genetic expression, but also it's a big complicated system that most people, I don't think, really have that much of an understanding of how complicated a commercial brewery really is. It's four ingredients, but the the expertise brewers have is kind of mind-blowing.
One of the things that we've been struggling with is trying to explain to people that beer is a living, breathing entity. It's an ecosystem unto itself. And that plays into storage and freshness. And we're trying to articulate it in a way that isn't super nerdy, but in a sense and in words that the average person can understand. Keep your beer in the fridge before you drink it, right? The longer it sits out at room temperature or hotter, damages it and can introduce off flavors or make it act funky. You can activate that yeast and maybe you'd have an explosion. Or cardboard, you know, the kind of oxidization effect. And we're always talking about how we can make it understandable in about one sentence. But the nice thing is I get to bring on people like you and we can dive deep into the nitty gritty. So I also wanted to make it clear though, you're not just like pushing pencils on paper. You're in the brewery getting your hands dirty, getting your feet wet. What's that like?
Yeah, half my time is spent on campus in the lab coat, glasses, doing the nerdy thing. The other half of the time is spent at the brewery, hauling around kegs, doing packaging, milling grain. And it's fantastic to have these two sides of, you know, a lot of computer work, a lot of detail-oriented stuff. But then, you know, like I can lift a 50-liter keg now. That's not something that most PhD students can do. So it's a lot of fun to be able to really get inside at the brewery and learn all the details that are involved with brewing. Even like sanitation is huge, and it's not something that you think requires expertise, but it really does.
I was talking with Zal and the boys and Vanessa a few weeks ago, and he was telling me that, well, he's always said for years that brewing is 10% brewing and 90% cleaning. And then we were talking about CIP systems, clean in place systems, because I was saying, well, how do you clean the inside of a keg if it's a fully contained, sealed thing? And so he's explaining, wow, we'll do this with the chemicals, we'll do that. And he was saying some days they'll use acids and some day they'll use bases, and they have to switch it up because the yeast or the materials evolve or grow or do something unexpected and can become like resistant or immune to acid. So they're like, instead of creating a super bug that's immune to acid, we're just going to nuclear blast it and make sure it's dead with something else.
Yeah, and there's a lot of different microbes. So what works on one isn't going to work with another one. And I mean, luckily with beer, it's kind of an inhospitable environment for most other microbes. The yeast really outcompete. But yeah, there's a lot of chemistry going on there too, that is interesting to bring from the lab into my experiences then at the brewery.
I had this terrible nightmare scenario where we're constantly fighting with and struggling with our yeast. And I'm thinking, man, what if the yeast mutates to a point where humans can't make beer anymore? Like, yeast goes off and goes crazy. And Zal's like, well, we're trying to manage that responsibly. And I was like, I got to ask Vina, because she's going to be way more smart about yeast than I ever could be.
Well, I'm still pretty early on here, but yeast is really, you got to think of it like livestock. It's been domesticated, and it's we've selected for the type of yeast that wants to make beer. We have, you know, they're like our loyal border collie. They want to work with us. They want the beer, and we want it too. So yeah, there's potential for us to end up mutating strains that don't make good beer, but then we just don't pitch them again. So it's really been this shepherding sort of evolution with beer, and the strains that make the best beer are the ones that keep getting used. And there's always some farmhouse in Norway somewhere who's going to have a strain if we run out.
So we're talking like there's thousands and thousands of strains of yeast, and I'm only aware of maybe a handful that are used for beer. Is that going to be the case forever, or are we going to develop something new? Like, how does it work?
Well, like, yeast is a really interesting organism just in general, because it's used in the laboratory quite a bit as well, as a model organism looking at, you know, anti-aging properties, or it makes insulin for us now, or other vaccines, like it makes a hepatitis, I think hepatitis C vaccine, as well as they're starting to develop COVID vaccines by yeast. So we've got thousands of laboratory strains, and then we have all these brewing strains, and then we have the wild strains. So there's just an incredible amount of diversity. And I think as brewers, we're probably going to keep chasing the new strain. Like, what can we do with the yeasts we have, and where can we find new ones? I'm specifically interested in just looking at the genomes of five strains that are used at 21st Street, and then how to train them to do what we want rather than actually changing anything about their genome. But genome editing is a thing, and there's between genome editing and breeding, there's unlimited possibilities with yeast.
Now you've triggered a question in my brain that makes the reporter/scientist in me go, okay, let's nip some crazies in the bud. Because when you say genetic modification, immediately my mind goes to the nonsense with GMOs and the fear-mongering should, and this, maybe this isn't a fair question to ask you, maybe it's for the philosophers, but to me, genetic modification of organisms in a controlled environment is okay. We're not going to be putting it into the food supply and just willy-nilly mutating humans or whatever. But from your perspective, what are you seeing with, when you say genetically modified, what do you mean? And what are the implications, if any?
Right. So there's, like, we've been genetically modifying them for thousands of years, right? And we can do some of those things in the lab now, and speed it up quite a bit. And I think it's going to be quite a conversation to have with the public about helping them understand what different types of modification can be done and what risks they hold. And I think, so this does lead into some of my science communication work with trying to rebuild that trust between the public and scientists. And I think it's really important that the public understands what our motivations are. Why do we want to make a new yeast? Would that benefit brewers? Would it be solving a real problem? Or is it just something that we want to try because we want to try? I think the public really should have a voice in the conversation. But they have to understand a lot of the basics so that they can be part of that conversation.
When I was sitting down talking with Chris and looking at his published work and reading those articles, my brain's cooking and I'm curious and I'm looking at it. So I can envision a scenario where the public takes a version of that information or a perception and runs with it, and it's inaccurate. And scientists, no offense, have not done a great job of communicating simply to the public in an effective manner. Like, it's frightening, because I've read things and I'm like, that's you're saying the scientist guy wrote XYZ, but really he wrote 1, 2, 3, but you're too dumb to read or craven or political or whatever.
They're, or just don't have the background.
Yeah. How do we fix that?
No pressure.
Sorry. That's not a fair question.
I think that is. So as academics, we tend to write papers and talk to other academics, and it tends to be kind of a closed club, because if you don't understand the jargon and you don't have the background, you really can't access that information in a clear way. So it is a scientist's responsibility to be able to boil down what their research is actually saying and communicate it to either scientists in other fields or non-scientists. And I think it's really a responsibility we have to communicate the problems that we're solving, the solutions we're coming up with, and things like what does science actually look like? Is it beakers in a lab, or is it, you know, pulling yeast samples from a fermentation every 4 hours for 2 days? it can look like rubber boots just as much as it can look like, you know, safety glasses.
Sometimes I, you know, we do marshmallow and spaghetti science with my kids, and we do these little fun experiments. They themselves are like these little curious natural scientists. And then I was trying to explain to somebody the marshmallow thing. And I said, you yourself can engage in an act of science. And you know what the most fun part is? All you have to do is line up like 6 or 7 beers and sit down with your friends and taste and talk about them. I was like, sensory analysis makes you a scientist. You're doing the act of science. And they're like, what? I'm like, it can be that fun.
Yeah, absolutely. I think just curiosity can really just bring so much joy to your life. You stop and look at, you know, that tree. Well, why did it grow that way? You drink this beer. Well, what gave it to this flavor profile? You know, we do talk a lot about hops and grains and stuff like that. And I would like to start talking more about what the yeast is bringing to the table. And that's absolutely legitimate science.
What beers are you digging right now?
Oh, I'm almost a fan of anything made with Kvike. that's just stolen my heart. But I just like to try anything that's weird. I guess I just want to ask the questions, right?
Kvike beers are tough. Like, they are challenging. Like, my first Kvike beer, I was like, I gotta rinse my mouth out.
Oh, you don't care for them.
Well, I don't know that I don't care for them. I know that the first handful that I tried had like a vomity character to them, but the latest one I tried did not. It was more fruity. So in the back of my mind says, I haven't found one that's for me yet. And I think the brewers at the time, the breweries who were supplying these beers, maybe hadn't dialed it in. Because your beer shouldn't taste like vomit regardless.
No. I mean, wet goat, but maybe not vomit. the Kvike is one I'm really interested in actually checking out what its genome is like. And seeing, because it makes me chuckle to think that a Norwegian yeast makes tropical fruit flavors. So what's going on there?
And you'd also started plugging in more people. I saw that you did a Pink Boots brew. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Sure. When I first started getting involved in the brewing scene, obviously, it seems like women aren't as well represented. So I really wanted to get involved with other women in the brewing industry. And I found the Pink Boots Society, and they are just a wealth of helpful information. So they do a collaborative brew every year. I believe you guys did one. So I was able to gather a bunch of female scientists from the lab here and bring them into the brew house. And they were hands-on. They were in there with the paddle, and they were really enjoying the brew. And then they were asking the science questions that they would be asking in the lab. You know, why is it doing this? What's the mechanism? And it was just such a great collaboration to have Casey walk us through all of that. And then to have another set of fresh perspectives in there, and also to introduce women who might not have ever brewed beer to showing them that it's not intimidating. It is something that everybody can do.
So what kind of beer did you brew for Pink Boots?
So we made a Maibock. And we named it after my personal hero, Hildegard of Bingen. I don't know if you know her. She's a 12th century abbess from Germany, and she was a polymath. She wrote philosophy, she wrote natural science, she wrote medicine, she wrote hymns and plays. And she actually is the first person to record the use of hops as a preservative in beer. And then she went on to be the founder of modern science in Germany. So we thought it would be really appropriate to have this handful of women scientists make a really hoppy beer and name it after her.
I love that whole story. How did it turn out?
It's still conditioning. We just dry hopped a week ago, and we're just waiting for things to settle up. But it's going in a real good direction. I'm excited for it. and then when it's done, we'll be packaging it. And we'll be throwing a fundraiser to launch it with funds going to Pink Boots Society, as well as Sanctum 1.5, which is an organization here in Saskatoon that helps HIV positive and at-risk mothers with their newborn babies.
Can you unpack that for me a bit? Tell me more about it.
Sanctive 1.5 is a Saskatoon organization that gets involved with people who are pregnant, who are also HIV positive or at risk. And they have a home where they can take in these people and get them the medical care they need, both pre and post labor. And it's a phenomenal organization that's really helping some of the most vulnerable in our community.
Are they a small group? Are they fairly big? I've never heard of them before.
It's a fairly small group. I think they only have room for, 10 beds in their home right now. But they are growing and they're gaining a lot of support in the community for the work they're doing.
So they're helping young moms make sure their kids don't get infected with HIV, or...
Right. Yeah. Because there's a lot of care that needs to happen when someone who's HIV positive is giving birth, to make sure that it doesn't get transmitted to the infant. But there's also a lot of struggles that happen after labor. Many of these people have issues with addictions that make it difficult to be a new parent, or maybe didn't learn how to parent on their own. And it can be a challenge for any new parent. So there's some special needs here that are addressed.
I remember reading in the Leader Post literally a day or two ago, maybe this is something that kicked off your line of thinking. It was saying the average person who's infected with HIV needs about $1.3 million in medical care. That's medication and care in Saskatchewan per year. And it was basically saying if we adopted a harm reduction model, every infection we prevent from ever happening, we save millions and millions of dollars and reduce strain on the healthcare system.
Wow, I hadn't heard that, but yeah, never mind preventing pain and suffering to a human being. It makes economic sense then, doesn't it?
I don't know how to articulate for people that it's not just out of the goodness of your heart. It's good for your pocketbook too. This is going to be the cynic in me. I think we're in this, I'm going to editorialize, a moral landscape that is not very in touch with what humans need. And we're more valuing people for what their economic output is or the burden they put on the system. And trying to say, well, it's just good to be a good human, to do a good thing, to help people, is not an argument that flies in this current social, economic, political climate. And so I always kind of default now to framing it in economic terms, whether people like that or not, and maybe it's crass. I'll get off my soapbox.
Yeah. No, I think it's a fairly compelling argument, because empathy is something that's really hard to teach and to instill in people after they've already maybe started to see the world with a little less compassion. So the economic arguments is fairly compelling for maybe the more rational side of human thought. But I hope that we all do the right thing because it's the right thing. But
well, I gotta say, when I was researching your work and seeing what you were doing on social, I was just inspired by it. I was like, wow, you're doing such cool stuff. I can't wait to talk to you on the pod.
Well, thank you. I hope that my joy and enthusiasm comes through. Enthusiasm is so infectious that if I can get a few more people interested in asking some questions, that's a win.
Do you think you're going to do another Pink Boots Brew next year?
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. It was a ton of fun this time around, and we'll make it bigger and better next year. This was my first time organizing one, so it was quite modest, but plans to do another big one next year. Yeah. We also, to celebrate International Women's Day, we had a ladies' beer tasting. So we gathered 13 women together and we got ourselves a BJCP, Leanne. And she led us through some of 21st Street's beers. And it was a wide range of women, those who didn't like beer and didn't know if they liked beer, to those who had done tastings before. And Leanne is so good at bringing community to everything. So it really was a fantastic group of women that we're going to be meeting regularly now to taste beer and share our lives.
I love it. I've literally personally gone to beer tastings where somebody will be there and say, I'm not a beer person. I'm just humoring my partner or my husband, whatever. And by the end, they're like, oh, maybe I am a beer person.
Yeah. And I think just being mindful about what you're drinking can really change your experience with it. If you just think I'm not going to like this, well, you probably won't. But when you're mindful and you actually start to pay attention to some of the flavors and aromas, there's almost something for everybody. Unless, you know, you have allergies or something like that.
When it comes to the research you're doing with Chris, when can people expect to see, touch, taste the results of your work?
Well, I have been assembling a sensory panel for some of my research. That'll probably be in a year or so. We'll start evaluating some of my small beers. And then hopefully 2 years down the road, we'll have some full-scale fermentations that I get to have played with the yeast before they went in.
Nice. If people want to find out more about you, the work you're doing, or even your Pink Boots collab, say they want to sign up, they're in the Saskatoon area, where should they go?
So the SQ Lab does have a website, and I will have to get that to you.
I've got those links.
Okay, good. So the SQ Lab does have a website. I'm on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Brew for Science. And you can always send me an email if you just want to nerd out sometime at fina.nelson@gmail.com. I would love to have a beer and get you involved in however you want to get involved.
Oh, Fina, thank you for your time today.
Thank you. I hope this was helpful and that your listeners enjoy the random musings of my mind.
I'm so glad I got to have you on the pod. It's been great.
And it was lovely to chat with you. I've listened to you on the podcast, so it's nice to put a face to the voice and to actually have a conversation with you.
Cheers.
All right. Take care.
Rebels, thanks for listening today. If you have any questions or comments about this episode, be sure to join us on our brand new Facebook group page, The Rebellion Brewing Podcast. I'm also proud to let you know we're members of the Saskatchewan Podcast Network. It's a one-stop shop for tons of locally produced shows from across our province. You can find them at saskpodcastnetwork.com. I'm going to include links to all things Fina Nelson in the show notes. Be sure to check it out. And don't forget to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Untappd so you don't miss out on the latest in Sask craft beer news. Thank you for joining the Rebellion.